Morning. Daf Dalet in Makos. We're at the bottom of the page on Gimel Amud Beis. Break up this morning into two parts. Part number one is going to be a little bit of mikvahs. When the tangent and the Gemara started talking about halachas that were set over by Rav Yehuda Merav, this morning the Gemara is going to continue with two more halachas by Rav Yehuda Merav. Okay, they both have to do with mikvahs. So this morning we'll spend about half our morning talking about mikvah, and we'll acquaint ourselves with some of the halachas about mikvahs. And then, starting with the Mishnah on the bottom, basic discussion of Malkus when it comes to Edim Zomimim. Okay. On the bottom of Gimel Amud Beis. Four lines from the bottom of the page. I'm reviewing, I'm Rav. Shosh lugim mayim shenafel atochen kartel shel yayin. Okay. Three lugim of mayim. Okay, let's just talk a little bit about our measurements. When you talk about a mikvah, so how much water do I need? How much collected water do I need in order to make a kasha mikvah? So the correct answer is 40 sa'ah. A sa'ah translates into how much quart, a pint, I don't know. 40 sa'ah, okay, give you a framework of how to understand it or how to view it. 40 sa'ah is about as much water as it would take to tovel a normal size adult at one time, right? The Kela Mikvah here, for example, right? It has an awkward shape to it, so I don't know if it's good imagery. But the Kela Mikvah, you could basically go into the Kela Mikvah and tovel in the Kela Mikvah, okay? terrible imagery, because if you knew the shape of the Kela Mikvah over here, you'd realize that's bizarre. But that's how much 40 sa'ah is. That's how much water you need in order to tovel. That is the requisite amount of water. Talk about water, by the way. Mikvah water can come either in one of two ways. Either it could be collected rainwater, right? Or it could be a natural body of water. A spring, an ocean, right? Something, a lake, something along those lines. Right? When is the water no longer any good? When it's mayim she'uvim, when it's drawn water. Meaning when you take the water and you put it into any type of vessel, at that point in time now, it's disqualified, it's pasul, it will not serve as mei mikvah. Okay? How much... Just one before we go on. I was going to... once you have a kasher mikvah, that's it. You can't ruin it. Right? So for example, let's say you have a kasher mikvah, and then you drop in a whole bunch of collected water, mayim she'uvim. It's not going to affect the mikvah. Once you have a mikvah that's kasher, a kasher mikvah is always going to be kasher. You could drop into a kasher mikvah gallons and gallons of collected water, mayim she'uvim. It doesn't matter. The mikvah's fine. Mikvah's going to be fine. Where's the problem going to be? The problem's going to be when you don't have the requisite amount of collected water, and you add to that mayim she'uvim. That's going to be a problem. When exactly is that going to be a problem? When you have three lugin of mayim she'uvim that's dropped into a kasher mikvah. Three lugin of mayim she'uvim of collected water dropped into it, not into a kasher mikvah. Right? Thank you. When you have three lugin of collected rainwater dropping into a mikvah, giving it the requisite shear, right? Giving it the requisite shear of 40 sa'ah, that's when it's going to be a problem. That's when the mikvah is going to be disqualified based on the gimel lugim. Gimel lugim is not a lot. A lug is approximately 16 ounces. Approximately. So you're talking about gimel lugim, it's really not a lot.
3 liters.
Right about here. It's not a lot of collected water. Okay. So far, so good. Okay, that's the very basics. Now Rav Yehuda Merav is going to teach us a halacha. Let's say I have three lugin of water. Water over here means mayim she'uvim, right? The water that was in a kli. And now I drop in a little bit of wine. Kortov shel yayin. I don't know how much a kortov is, but it's a little bit. It's enough in order so that it will discolor the three lugin of water. Umareim kamari yayin. Now it looks like wine. V'nafu la mikvah, and it goes into a mikvah, lo pasluhu. It will not disqualify the mikvah. Why not? And the answer is, because it's no longer considered water. Once you drop in enough wine so that it discolors it, it's considered wine. Right? Very diluted. Highly diluted. It's just a couple of drops of wine that fall into the gimel lugin, into the three lugin of water, but it's enough now to call it wine. And once it's wine, it's not water. Water passels a mikvah. Wine does not passel a mikvah. Dinan Rabbi Yosi Amar Meitzev Apostle Nesamekva V'Shoshalogin. The Gemara says, Gemara quotes in the name of Rabbi Yosi, I don't care if the water is discolored. A discolored water is considered water. It's plain and simple. So what difference does it make whether the water has no color, right? Regular water color, or if it's colored purple, what difference does it make? So Amalei Rava Hasamai Tzava Mikre Hacha. I'm sorry, Mikre Hachachamra Miziga Mikre. And the Gemara says, I'll tell you what the difference is. When it's color, when you put in some food coloring, let's say you make the water for green or blue or whatever, right? When you give it another color, it's still water. It's colored water. When you add a little bit of wine, now that's wine. Mm. And it may be diluted, but it's still wine. When all said and done, it's wine.
Only a minority is just wine.
It's just a little bit of wine. A
drop of wine makes everything called wine.
Yeah. That's a chiddush. That's a big chiddush in the Gemara, but that's a chiddush. Okay? The hatani. Okay, fine. So now we've understood, to a limited extent, but we've understood now that when I discolor water into wine, I make it now look wine-like. So now the halach is that will not disqualify a mikvah. Any other water, colored any other color, will disqualify a mikvah, meaning to say that if I drop 3 lugan of it into a mikvah, it will pass over the mikvah.
Does this apply to the wine today? Because their wine used to be very concentrated.
Right. I don't know, but yeah, I would imagine. The Hatani Rabbi Chia Haridu is a mikvah. The Gemara says, okay, but here's the problem. Problem is a Braisa by Rabbi Chia. Braisa says, Haridu is a mikvah, downgrade the mikvah. Rabbi Chia writes in a Braisa that if I drop this diluted wine into a mikvah, 3 lugan of it into a mikvah, the mikvah is downgraded. The mikvah is no longer good. It's a disqualified mikvah. So, okay, basically now, to put everything on the table, we have two opinions. One opinion said by Rav Yehuda Marav, which he's an Amora. Now remember that's important. One halacha by Rav Yehuda Marav is that wine will not disqualify a mikvah, even if it's essentially water, just colored a little bit with a couple of drops of wine. It will not disqualify a mikvah. And meanwhile, Rabbi Chia writes in a braisa that if I drop wine or diluted wine into a mikvah, it disqualifies a mikvah. So I have a contradiction. The problem is, that's not really a contradiction. It's a braisa against Rabbi Yehuda Marav. Okay, we've said in the past that Rav is a Tana. Like a Tana, Rav can argue with a braisa. Ama Rava Lokasha, HaRav Yochem Menuri, HaRabanan. So the Gemara says there's no contradiction. One, Rav Yehuda Marav is really Rav Yochem Menuri, and the Braisa that was quoted by Rabbi Chia is going like the Chachamim. Nine. We learned in a Braisa. It's a Mishnah. Sorry. Shloshes Lugin Mayim, Chaser Kurtav. If let's say I have 3 Lugin of water, but it's not exactly 3 lugan, it's missing a little bit. It's missing a kurtov. A couple of drops of minus less than 3 lugan. Okay? Shenafa lesochan kurtov yayin. And now I drop in a kurtov of yayin or marin kamar yayin. And now it's wine like. Okay? So what I have in front of me now is 3 lugan of diluted, heavily diluted wine. Venafu lamikva lo pasluhu. And that falls into a mikvah, it will not disqualify the mikvah. V'chein, gemol
u'gemayin chas... The mikvah is already a mikvah?
No, because if it is...
Yeah, right.
It's
disqualified.
Right.
It doesn't say complete.
It should say complete. Right? I understand your point. Right. Right. V'chein, gemol u'gemayin chas, the kortov shenaf al-soch and kortov chalav, omarin kamarim mayim, v'nachlu l'mikvah, lo paslu. Similarly, if let's say I start off with the same amount of water, 3 lugan minus a little bit, and supplementing it with milk, not with wine, but with milk. Now, milk is white, but let's assume though that little bit of milk that falls into the water will not change the color of the water. It still will essentially look like water, and that falls into a mikvah. Lo pasul, it doesn't pass with the mikvah. Why not? Because you didn't have 3 lugan of water. You had 3 lugan minus a little bit. The supplemental liquid that fell in was milk. That will not add up to 3 lugan of water. That is the opinion of the Tanakhama. Okay, Rav Yochem ben Nuri Omer Hakol Holech Achar Hamare, and Rav Yochem ben Nuri comes and he argues, and he says, Whenever you have any of these discussions, the most critical aspect is color. Color is the most critical aspect. And Rashi explains what that means is the following. That in the case where I supplemented the three lugan with a couple of drops of wine, and now it's red in appearance, it looks like wine, albeit it's mostly water and just a little bit of wine, but I look at it, it looks like wine, it's wine. I drop that into a mikvah, it will not disqualify the mikvah. Because it's wine getting mixed up with the waters of the mikvah, that does not disqualify the mikvah. It's wine. When it's supplemented with a little bit of milk, and so therefore it doesn't change the color of the water, and it still essentially looks like water. So you know what I have? Water. When I drop into the mikvah, you know what happens? The mikvah becomes pasul. Okay? We have now a machlokes between Rav Yochanan and the Tanakhama. Now I go back, and now I plug everything back in. Rav Yehuda Marav says that when I drop some wine into the water, it's now wine, even though essentially it's water, even though it's for the most part water, right? It's the chazusa, the appearance looks like wine. So Rav Yehuda Marav says that will not pass on a mikvah. Who is he following? Rav Yochanan ben Nuri, the Tana. Okay? And what about the Braisa Rabbi Chiya? The Braisa Rabbi Chiya that says that I don't care what it looks like, right? If it's gimel lugan, if it's three lugan, it's going to pass as water, even if its appearance is wine. That position, Rabbi Chiya, goes like the Tanakhama of our Braisa. Okay, for the next, I would say about 5 to 10 lines of Gemara, it's going to get extraordinarily technical. So, right, stay with me, and we'll get past this next part over here. Hami bai bai le Rav Papa, de bai Rav Papa. The Gemara points out that Rav Papa, when he learned this Mishnah Mikvos, had the following question. Rav Tani Chasta, I'm sorry, De Bai Rav Papa. Rav Tani Chasta, Court of Beresha, Val Shoshalugam Matanakama, Pasle, the Asr of Yochanan Lamemar, Akol Elcha Achra Amara. Is it that when the Tanakama stated his position, he talked about a case, the Tanakama that is, of that Mishnah, talked about a case where there was less than three lugan, but had there been three lugan, it would have been a three lugan of water, and you discolored it with wine, right? That's where Rav Yochanan disagrees and says, "Hakol halecha chamara." Rav da'amak Rav Yochanan Nuri, and when Rav states his position, when we say Rav over here, we really mean Rav Yehuda Marav. And when Rav Yehuda Marav states his position, he's only going like Rav Yochanan Nuri. Odilma Rav lo tenichas the court of Bereisha, or maybe when learning that Mishnah Mikvaos, that Mishnah talked about chas. It didn't say chas the court of in the first part of the Mishnah. Rav Yochanan Ben Nuri ki palag asefu de palag, and Rav Yochanan Ben Nuri is only arguing on the second case of the Mishnah, not the first case of the Mishnah. V'Rav damar ki divrei Hakol, and Rav is therefore following everybody, meaning that maybe in the Mishnah Mikvaos, the first case in the Mishnah is talking about a case where I have three lugan, not chaser korta, but three lugan, and then wine falls in, the wine will not disqualify the mikvah, and it could very well be that Rabbi Yehuda Marav is not limited to Rabbi Yochanan Ben Nuri's position, but both Rabbi Yochanan Ben Nuri and the Tanakhama. If that's true, if that's correct, so then it comes out now that we no longer can align, because we no longer really have a debate on the matter. So the Gemara says, Rav Papa mi baile le Rav Pshita le. So the Gemara says, yeah, Rav Papa was unclear about how to learn that Mishnah Mikvos, but Rav was very clear about how to learn that Mishnah Mikvos. So based on Rav's understanding of the Mishnah Mikvos, it aligns. Rav Yochanan Ben Nuri falls like Rav Yehuda Marav. Let me say it correctly. Rav Yehuda Marav falls like Rav Yochanan Ben Nuri, and the Tanakhama of that Mishnah Mikvos falls like Rabbi Chiya. Okay, I'm Rav Yosef Lo Shmieli Hashmaisa, Amale Abaye. Here we have one more discussion about this Mishnah Mikvos. Rav Yosef says, I don't remember that discussion in the Mishnah Mikvos. So Amale Abaye. So Abaye says to him, Atamart Lan Nihalan, V'Hachi Amart Nihalan. What do you mean? You taught us that Mishnah Mikvos, and when teaching us that Mishnah Mikvos, the Rav Lo Tani Chaster Korta Bereisha. Rav Yochanan Asefa Palig, that in the first part of that Mishnah we did not have the clause Chaser Kortov. The first part of the Mishnah was only talking about where you have three lugan of water, and Rav Yochanan is only arguing on the second half of the Mishnah. V'Rav Damar Kedivrei Hakol, and Rav now is going like everybody. Okay, fine. Again, Rashi brings down, like he always does, Rav Yosef was sick, he went through a terrible illness in his lifetime, forgot all of his learning, and very often we find in the Gemara Abaye reminding Rav Yosef what he taught. But essentially it comes out to be the same, that according to Rav Yosef, not remembering what he taught, there is no debate in the Mishnah in a case where I have three lugan of water and I discolor it and I turn it into wine. There everybody agrees it's now officially wine. And so therefore when dropped into the mikvah, it will not disqualify the mikvah. And when Rav Yehuda Merav makes his statement that three lugan of diluted wine going into mikvah will not disqualify it, why does he say that? According to Rav Yosef and according to Rav Papa, or Rav Papa's not sure, it's going like everybody, not just Rav Yochanan ben Nuri, it's going like the Tanakhama as well. Okay? That ends the first part of today's discussion about mikvahs. Okay, diluted wine falling into a mikvah does not disqualify the mikvah. Okay.
In terms of just the regular water that you're drawing, right? So you get three lugan and you mix it with whatever. But why didn't we apply the concept of batal varov in terms of your majority of water that's already, like, you know.
Right, so it's you're right. In theory, it would work. This disqualification of Maim Shu'uvim is only a rabbinic disqualification. Okay, Rashi brings it down the previous page. Okay. Next, one more halach about mikvahs, and then we come back to Edom Zomamim. Okay, Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav. We're in the middle of Dal Amud Aleph, and halacha number two. Okay, the first halacha was challenging, right? Difficult. Not in concept. In concept, we basically get it. Wine does not disqualify a mikvah, right? But it's a question of how to learn the Mishnah mikvahs, what the correct yirsa is in the Mishnah mikvahs. Amoraim arguing. Okay, so it got a little difficult. This next halacha is also going to be difficult, okay? And I'll explain, well, hopefully I'll be able to explain why. I'm Rav Yehuda Merav. Chavis Malei Amayim, Shenafo L'Yam HaGadol. Okay, this halacha is conceptually very difficult. Here you have a barrel of water. Now the barrel of water is obviously Mayim She'uvim, right? Obviously. It's drawn water. It's in a barrel, okay? Certainly, if the barrel's big enough, you have the picture in your mind of the old westerns where they would take a bath in the barrel. So clearly that barrel is not a kosher mikvah because that barrel is collected water. And so it's Mayim She'uvim. It's certainly going to be possible, right? So certainly if I tovel in that barrel, assuming the barrel's big enough, that will not be a good tefillah. Okay, that we know.
But it's fresh water, right?
Well, even if it is, it doesn't matter. It's Mayim She'uvim, it's drawn water. Okay. It's water in a vessel now, so it's disqualifying. Okay. So that's clear.
The water is still in the vessel.
Huh?
The water is still enclosed in the
right.
barrels.
Then, I take that water and I dump it into Yamagadol. Whenever the Gemara says Yamagadol, it's talking about the Mediterranean. I dump it into the Mediterranean Ocean. Okay? So I go to Tel Aviv, I go to Yafo, and we'll go up north a little bit to Netanya, and we'll dump the barrel of water into the Yamagadol. And then hatovel sham lo also lo tvila. If then I jump into the Mediterranean now, right? This is conceptually difficult because I would assume, aside from batal barov, that there's a right water liquid right tends to disperse, and I'm no longer going to say that water there is aggregated and pooled in one confined area. I normally will assume that it just simply displaces like water tends to do. Nevertheless, the halacha, the Rav Yehuda Merav says, is that if I tovel there, lo also lo tefila, tefila is not a good tefila, chayshinan l'shlo shalugim, shalo yu b'makom echad. Because I concern myself with the idea that three lugin is still going to be in one place, and essentially I'm now toveling in mayim she'uvim. Okay. That is the halacha as presented to us. Okay, now, number one, conceptually it's very difficult. Very difficult. The water just doesn't just simply disperse, and it stays there in aggregate, and it's collected. And we're not talking about, it's not like a oil spill, let's say for example, I'm just throwing it out there, right, where the oil obviously is of a different viscosity than the water, and the oil is collected and aggregated in one place. It's not like that. We're talking about water and water. Okay? So just conceptually, it's very difficult. Okay? But halachically, it's even more difficult. Why? So Tosfos brings us down over here, and I'll just introduce you to a concept in the world of mikvaos, the concept of hashaka. Okay? If you're not familiar with this concept, if this is the first time you're being introduced to it, so welcome to Mikvos. The top Tosfos on the page, Tosfos discusses this this problem. It's not a problem, it's a concept which presents a very serious problem. The concept is a concept called Hashaka. Okay? Water, okay, let's how do I introduce it? Let's do it like this. Food becomes tame, kiss it goodbye. Right? Once food becomes tame, you can't take the food and tovel it in the mikvah. It doesn't work. Right? The mikvah is not going to be matara food. Right? It worked fine. There's nothing to do with it. Right? If it's truma, you have to burn it. Okay, fine. Most liquids that become tame, same story. Kiss it goodbye. There's nothing you could do about it. Water, however, that becomes tame, there's a way to fix it. There's a way to remedy the water. And that is, take the water and tovel it in the mikvah. Now you'll say to me, now wait a second. Wait. Hold on one second. What? How are you going to get it back? Okay. So, there's this concept called Hashaka. Okay? Not the best visual, but it'll work. Assuming now that I have tame water in here. Water that becomes tame. It could become tame in so many ways. It comes into contact with the source of tumah, it doesn't matter. Now what I do is I take this, and let's assume that this table over here is a mikvah. Mm-hmm. I immerse it into the mikvah just so that now I will have some communication. Doesn't have to be a whole lot. Just a obviously I'm going to have to lower it. Okay. Again, work with me in the imagination. I lower it down, and all I need is just the smallest amount of communication between the water in the mikvah and the water that's in this vessel, and all the water in here becomes tahor. Okay? And this is a concept called hashaka. Okay? The mikvah that we have here in the shul, as all mikvahs throughout the world, have to operate basically on this principle. You have two pits, so to say, in the ground. Right, the bor hashaka, and the pit that we tovel in, and there's always a pipe that creates that communication between the two, and once there's communication between the two, even if this water is tame, once I create communication, this water over here becomes tahor. So Tosfos over here says, "Now I don't understand. Let's talk about our case here in the Gemara. Our case in the Gemara." I took water, I dumped the water into the Yam HaGadol. I dumped it into the Mediterranean. You have Hashaka to the highest level over here. It's more than just communication. You have a total mixture of one water and another water. If Hashaka can take water, which is Tamei, and turn it Tahor, Hashaka can for sure take Mayim Shuvim and transform it into fine water. What? Yeah, 100.
Right. Correct.
So look at the top Tosfos on the page. Tosfos over here writes, "Kach kirsas akuntrus v'kamer lo also lo tefila misha mayim she'uvim v'lo nira." Tosfos says, "I don't understand." Right, Tosfos here spells out the question. If Hashaka can take something tummy and turn it into Tahor, who adin and tefillah nami? You don't think Hashaka can take water and make it mikvah worthy? You don't think it could do that? Okay. Now that's a powerful question. That first question of Tosfos is like, I don't know currently how to defend Rashi on such a question. That's an extraordinarily powerful question of Tosfos on Tosfos' part. Then he quotes the Gemara Beitza, Matpilan Kli Al Gabei Kli Miyamav L'Taro VeElchisak LeTfila L'Go Menaha Hamayim Shebetoch Shuavim V'Lo Meiru VeHashaka Ba'Ama Adif Lehu. The Gemara Beitza basically describes a scenario where we're going to tovel a kli using the concept of Hashaka, so that the water inside the kli now becomes mikvah water, and so therefore the kli is fine. So again, it basically comes to the same point. Hashaka should make that barrel water into fine mikvah water. Okay? Tosfos says, Hashaka works. Lekach nira, So Tosa says, so what are you going to do with our Gemara? How are you going to understand our Gemara? So you know what you'll do with our Gemara? Our Gemara is not talking about water. The barrel's not filled with water. The barrel's filled with wine. This makes everything a lot better, halachically and even conceptually. Because what I dumped into the Yam HaGadol was not water, says Tosfos, it was wine. Right? He has a different girsa in the Gemara. It's a different text in the Gemara altogether. And so therefore, when I dump it into the Yam HaGadol, and then I jump into that little pool, the concern now is that I'm not jumping into mikvah water. It could very well be that what I'm jumping into is wine. So the
assuming that the water is stationary.
That's exactly. Well, the Gemara is going to say that straight out. But yes, that's correct. Okay. So, and that's Tosus's explanation of our Gemara over here. And halachically, it makes it a whole lot better. And conceptually, just also, it helps us out a little bit in terms of just how to visualize this whole scenario. Okay.
Why not keep the case of the lake rather than the Yamak?
Yamak, right.
Because in the lake, at least
it's easier. It's easier to see it in a lake. Okay.
But that Yam HaGadol is a lake.
Yeah.
No,
it's the biggest lake in the world.
All right. I don't know if there's such a distinction, but if there is, fine. Okay. Let's go back to the Gemara. Chavetz Malay Amayim Shenafel Yam HaGadol Tov Hashem Lo Asalot Tfila Cheshin Lo Shoshem Logim Shilu B'Makom Echad V'Dafka Lo Yam HaGadol. This halacha of Rabbi Yudah Marav. Again, according to Rashi, we're talking about water, which is difficult. According to Tosfos, we're talking about wine, okay, which is easier to understand. I mean, certainly, to say Rashi's wrong is, you know, not the approach. To say Rashi's difficult to understand, that's the approach.
How does Tosfos deal with the idea that if he actually dropped a wine in it and make it, then it was fine? How does he deal with it?
Because essentially, how is this different? In other words, there, you know you're toveling in water. Over here, you may be just sitting in a bath of wine. Right? Sitting in a bath of wine is not going to... That's the only... Okay. This halacha, I'm sorry. This halacha is only true by Yam HaGadol, Dekai V'Kaimi, because that's a stationary body of water. Aval Nahar Ba'alma, but if you have a flowing stream, lo, so then this halacha is not true. Because then you assume whatever you dump in, according to Rashi, water, according to Tosfos, wine, whatever you dump in a stream, in a flowing stream, it's just gonna keep going, it's going to wash, and whatever you're now jumping into is water. Tainami Hachi and a brace is supporting this as well. Chavitz Malay Yain, Shanafali Yamagado, Atofa Shamla Asalo Tvila, Chayshilan Shal Shalugin Shuavim, Shaloyu Bemakom Echad. Vechen Kikar Shal Truma. Similarly, if I have Kikar Shal Truma, loaf of Truma, Shanafal Sham, Tame, it becomes Tame. I do not want to get into this right now, but Maim Shuvim will disqualify Truma. It's one of the things mentioned in the beginning of Shabbos, Masechta Shabbos, that Beit Shammai is one of the Gzeiros Truma, the Yud Ches Davar, the 18 things that Beit Shammai disqualified in terms of Truma Tahara. One of them is that Maim Shuvim will disqualify Truma, not for now. Kikar Shal Truma Shana for Sham.
Can you make bread?
Huh?
I didn't make Truma bread. I call him maybe bread.
Right? I know that. There's gotta be an easier answer to that.
Wait, what's the question?
If Maim Shuvim is gonna passel Truma. But Menachos, they use oil. So that's...
No, but the hand is dry by the time they touch the bread, no?
No, but Maim Shuvim... Okay, I'm not sure.
Is
okay.
The water coming directly in contact with the bread in that case?
For right straight from the mikvah? Okay, I'm not sure. V'chein ma'u... I'm sorry, my v'chein. So the Gemara says there are two examples over here of Maim Shuvim. Why two examples? Because when you're talking about a person who's Tameh, who goes in and wants to do a tefillah, so here you'll make the argument, look, he's Tameh, he has a presumption of being Tameh, you want to say now that this toveling in the mikvah is good, You need a lot to say that. You need to know definitively that's a kasha mikvah. But over here, uke truma chazaka, the truma start off with a different presumption. The truma start off with a presumption of being tahor. And now, you want to tell me that because there may be maim shu'uvim over there, the truma will be tamei, kamash malan, and that's the chiddush. And it's of course a big chiddush that will use this idea of maim shu'uvim to go in both directions. Both in the direction of saying that somebody who's tamei did not receive a proper tahara, and that even truma, which is for sure tahor, now will become tamei because of the maim she'uvim, the quote unquote possible maim she'uvim.
But that's a halacha or a gzera?
Maim she'uvim itself is an issa derabanan, and the truma is a gzera. It's absolutely a gzera.
Did maim she'uvim for Mizbeach on She'el Sukkot?
No, that's different. That's a different halacha.
When they're suggesting in the notes here that because the man who was tamei touched the water there,
right,
it contaminated the water there, and therefore the truma which touches after that.
Right, right. But okay, fine. I hear that. We are basic. Okay, good. We are done with our two tangents for this morning. So good. We had two halachos and mikvaos. One about discolored water going and filling up a mikvah, right? You have three lugim, but those three lugim are not of mayim; it's of diluted wine. So that's one halacha where Rabbi Yehuda Merav says that will not disqualify the mikvah. The mikvah will be fine. That's number one. And that's the halacha. And number two is this barrel being thrown into the ocean. Okay, which is a difficult halacha conceptually. According to Rashi, it's difficult both conceptually and halachically, because if once water gets mixed up with water, you have the concept of hashaka. So how do you defend Rashi? I'm not sure. According to Tosfos, we're talking about not water being thrown in, but wine being thrown in. That's a little bit better, and both conceptually and halachically. And the point of Rabbi Yehuda Merav is that once you go into the ocean, and you are now in this pool of either water or wine, Rashi Tosfos, so you will not, the tahara will not be a good tahara.
Well, what distance?
Not
what distance from this barrel? And what period of time?
I don't know. These are good questions. I don't know.
Distance and time. I mean, it could be 10 minutes there or something.
Right, right. Eventually, it's going to get displaced. Eventually.
Right.
You have to assume. Okay. Good. We now continue. We are now starting the Mishnah, and we're back to Okay, so we start off with our two principal witnesses, and they come and they testify, you know, Reuven or Shimon 200 zuz. Okay, along comes the second set of witnesses, the Edom HaMazimim, and they say, these first two set of witnesses are liars, and they conspire, and Imanu Ayisim HaMakom Ploni, they were with us at the time, Venimsu Zomimim, and now the two original witnesses are Edom Zomimim, so we know what we do, we know what we're supposed to do, Vasisim Lo Kesher Zomim Lasos Lachiv, so we're going to do to them what they conspire to do against the defendant, against the poor defendant. So now, Lokin Umishalmim. Rav Meir is of the opinion that two things are going to happen to these witnesses. Number one, they're going to get malchus, and number two, they're going to have to pay. Okay? Wow. Two punishments? Shalom Hashem HaMavili De Malchus Mavili De Tashlamim Div Rav Meir. Because Rav Meir says, yeah, because it's not the same. Look, on one hand, they lied in court. Lo Sana, one of the Ten Commandments. You're not allowed to lie in court. So for that, that's a lav. That's a negative prohibition. So they're going to get malchus. And Vasisa lo kasher zamam lasos lachiv. They wanted to cause a loss of money. So because they wanted to cause a loss of money, they themselves now are going to have to lose money. Lokin umishamim. That's the opinion of Rav Meir. Okay. V'chachamim omrim. Huh?
Rav Meir holds a drasha of a monster.
Yeah. Lokin. Yeah. The Chachamim Omrim Kol Hamishalim Eino Loke, and the Chachamim say no. The Kol Hamishalim Eino Loke, that no, you can't get two. You only get one. You cannot get two. Rashi over here on the Mishnah writes, as we will see in the Gemara in just a moment, you don't get two punishments for one act, right? Rashi Dichsiv. Third line from the bottom. You do one thing wrong. In our system of justice, you can only get one punishment, not two punishments. And in this case, it's going to be money and not Malkus. Kol Mishalim Eino Loke. Okay, that's number one in the Mishnah.
Basically, one principle is the.
It's the same. It's the same.
Is it supposed to be a cumulative derabim?
It's the same. It's essentially it's a function of cumulative derabim.
But the thing is that
here
the more severe punishment is taken.
Right. Right. Here it's hard to talk about severity when you're talking about either lashes or death. So it's easier there to talk about severity. Some people, you know, would rather pay money than get beaten, and you know, and there are others who like the money a lot.
But when Rami say it's really two things in wrong, right? Rami would say there's two things wrong. Eidi Zamamim,
right?
And Lasane.
Correct, correct.
And Rabbanan say what?
Right. And the Chachamim. No. They both. It's one act. It's one act of lying in a court of law.
It's over two lavim.
And Rav Meir will tell you that those are two separate lavin.
Right, and the Rabbanan would say what?
And the Rabbanan would say, that's nice, it's two separate lavin. But choose.
Two lavin.
Yeah, but choose. Kedei Rishasto. It's case number two in the Mishnah. Me'idim anu b'yishponishu chayev malchus arbaim. Let's say, witnesses come forward and say, that person violated a lav in the Torah. Okay, so our two principal witnesses turns to a guy and says, "You know, I saw that guy. Let's choose a classic. He shaved with a razor. Okay, simple law in the Torah, and he and right. It's a low style say. It's a negative prohibition in the Torah. I chose a good one because it's a maisa. It requires an action. And so now, basically, what this poor guy now is going to get malchus. Along comes two witnesses, and the two witnesses say, "Hold it! Wait! Stop!" Don't give him the lashes. Those witnesses are lying. They weren't there in the bathroom with him at the time of shaving. They were with us at the time, right? Imanu Ayusim b'makom ploni. They were with us at the time, so they can't. There's no way they could possibly have testified about that. Okay. Now, once again, v'asisam lo kasher zaman. So here now, it's going to be essentially the same machlokas. Rav Meir says, give him two sets of lashes. The witnesses. Assuming he can handle it.
As much as he can take.
But up to 80 lashes. 80, of course, minus 2. But up to 80 lashes is what you're going to give the witnesses, because, count it up, one set of lashes for lo sane. They falsely testified in a court of law. A second set of lashes for v'asisim lo kasher zamam la sasachiv.
I'm pretty sure I'm not smarter than Rabbi Meir, but doesn't the pasuk in the Torah, the whole idea of hazama, scrap the whole idea of anything, the establishment of hazama penalty, shouldn't that by implication wipe away also for the lab itself? I mean, that's the whole point of it, right? That you're creating a new encapsulated set of punishment for what they did, but not a la carte for...
No, but there are two, according to Rav Meir, right? If we're defending Rav Meir, there are two prohibitions in the Torah. You got to court and you lied in court. Stop right there. That's one law in the Torah. Okay? Then it happens to be that there's now another chiddush in the Torah, that when you are caught conspiring, not just lying, but conspiring, what's the difference? It sounds the same. The difference lies in the fact that two other witnesses come forward and say they were with us at the time, Imanu Ayisim b'makom ploni, and therefore now they're branded a new label, aside from the fact that they lied in court. They're also Eidim Zomimim. And so therefore, according to Rav Meir, that's another lav of Eidim Zomimim. Rav Meir compartmentalizes and he puts them in two separate camps.
But the fact that the Hazama penalty is defined by what they plan to do, it should have just been by itself saying, oh, you plan to do so, here's the punishment for trying to harm someone else. With
correct. So you're going to get...
It attached to exactly what
correct. In this particular case, it happens to be that the reciprocal punishment they're going to get is Malchus. But in no way does that... We're not going to ignore the fact that he also violated the Yisr of Losana. He did both. Okay, so that's Rameir's opinion. Shmoni mishum lo sanim berecha ishakim mishum v'asisim lo kasher zamam div Rameir. And again, Rameir, just as consistent as he was in the first case. In fact, it's really a repeat of what he said in the first case. It just happens to be that over here, it's a bigger chiddush because it's a double lash. Maybe you could have made an argument that Rameir would... Rameir's consistent. V'chachamim omrim ein lokin ela arbayim. And the Chachamim say, you're only going to get 40 lashes, not 80. Gemara, top of Dal, I'm a Beis. Bishlam l'Rabbanan k'dei Rishasu k'si, mishum Rishachas atah mechayvo, v'yatah mechayvo mishum shtei Rishayos. The Gemara immediately defends the Chachamim. You want to talk about the more reasonable approach, right? If we could say that. That's the Chachamim's approach. Because even when there are two violations being violated, which over here is the case, he lied in court, and he's an Eid Zomim. But still, Kidei Rishasa, you choose. Mishum Rishachas, HaTamechad, V'Tamechad, Mishum Rishayos. So therefore, the Chachamim is a more reasonable approach. El Rameir my Taima. But what's the reason for Rabbi Meir? How is it Rabbi Meir is going to argue on this basic concept of Kidei Rishasa? Amar Ula Gamar Mimotzi Shemra. Mimotzi Shemra Loke Mishalem Avkol Loke Umishalem. So the Gemara says, oh, okay, so here's what we'll do for Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir will have a case in the Torah where it is precedented that you're going to get Malkus and you're going to have to pay. And that's the case of Motzi Shemra. In Parshas Kisese, there is a halacha that you marry the Torah describes a scenario, you marry this young girl, a Nara, a Basula, you think she's a virgin, and next morning you go to court and you tell the court she was no virgin. Right? When after the first night of relations with her, I did not find any blood, and she is not a virgin. And it turns out, well, now obviously he could be telling the truth, but what if he's caught in a lie? What if he's just simply defaming her? This is what's called Motzi Shemra. Motzi Shemra is the idea that he, defamation of character, he lied about it, it's not true, and the Torah says three things are going to happen. Three consequences. Number one, the Yisruso, you give him lashes. Number two, he has to pay. As a fine, as a kanas, he has to pay the family of who he defamed 100 shkalim. And number three is that he can never divorce
her. That's a big bunch.
I think it's one, what, the thing is the money is a kanas, right? There's
like... Excellent. Hold. Okay, right on the money. Okay, no pun intended. Oh, God. All right, so but we do find a scenario where a guy for one thing that he did wrong, which is Motzi Shemra, he's going to get lashes and he's going to have to pay. So Rav Meir says same thing over here. So Al Rav Meir, my time, I'm look, my Motzi Shemra, my Motzi Shemra, Loka Mishalim, I've called Loka Mishalim, Mala Motzi Shemra Shekain Kenas. So now Ben, you're 100% correct. The Gemara says, wait a second, what a terrible precedent, right? That's talking about kanas. In Motzi Shemra, the money they have to pay is fine. That's a fine. So Savala Rabbi Akiva Damrei Demzomemim Kanasahu, not a problem. But Meir is going to agree with Rabbi Akiva. Yesterday we had this discussion. Adam Zomemim, is that money or is that kanas? So that's subject to a debate. Rabbi Akiva is of the opinion that Adam Zomemim is a kanas. So we're going to align Rabbi Meir with Rabbi Akiva. So now it's a perfect parallel of Motzi Shemra and Adam Zomemim. Okay, fine.
It doesn't help you out with the second.
Correct. It will not help you out because there it's lashes and lashes. Absolutely correct. Okay, now what we're going to do is basically we're going to learn the same concept of Ula, but not over here in regarding our Mishnah in Makos, but regarding another halacha, Detanya. Lo sasir mimenu ad boker, v'anosir mimenu ad boker, ba'ish tisrofu. Okay, there's a prohibition in the Torah called nosar. You're not allowed to leave any carbon left over. Now this was told to us in Parshas Bo regarding the carbon Pesach, but it's true regarding any carbon. That if I leave any of the meat of the carbon over, I violated a law. The law is called lo sosiru. No, sir. Right? Then the Torah says, and if you do, the Eish Tesrofo. The next morning you wake up, or by the Karban Pesach, at least according to one opinion, by midnight, after midnight, you burn it. Right? The Eish Tesrofo. Even according to Rav Elazar ben Yaakov, I'm thinking aloud right now, just to ignore the next like 30 seconds. Even according to Rav Elazar ben Yaakov, I do not believe you burn it until the morning. Right. It's just, right. Correct. Right. So okay, fine. So mimenu ad boker. Ba kasalite nase achalosa selomer shein lokin alav divra of Yehuda. Rav Yehuda says, "What's the ase coming to tell you that you do not get malchus? This is what's called a lav hanitak la ase." Good. Rabbi Kiva Amar Lomen Hashem Uzeh Alam Mishum Dehavah Lav Shein Bo Maisa. For Cholav Shein Bo Maisa Ain Lokin Alav. And along comes Rabbi Akiva and says, no, that's not the reason why you don't get Malkus. You don't get Malkus because it's an inaction. It's a lav with no action. You don't get Malkus for a lav with no action. Mechlal Rabbi Yehuda Sava lav shein b'maisa lokin a lav. Rabbi Yehuda is of the opinion that a lav shein b'maisa, you're going to get Malkus. Minale, now, why are we talking about this? For this point right over here. How do I know that according to Rabbi Yehuda, I'm going to get Malkus even for a lav shein b'maisa? Amar Ula, in comes Ula, gamar mi motzi shemra, learns it from motzi shemra. Ma motzi shemra, lav shein b'maisa, lokin alav, afko lav shein b'maisa, lokin alav. Motzi shemra is a lav shein b'maisa. We see this time and again, that dibur, that just talking, is not an action, right? Obviously your lips move, but it's not considered an action. And so therefore, we see by motzi shemra, that you're going to get Malkus for doing an inaction. So Ula says that becomes now the precedent that throughout all the other times in the Torah where it's a lav shein b'maisa, you're going to get Malkus. Okay.
And Rabbi Akiva disagrees with the concept of lav and nitivla,
say? Yeah, I don't know.
You can also say that.
I don't know.
Motzi
Shemra
in a way.
Okay. So the Gemara says, wait a second. Motzi Shemra is a terrible precedent. Why? Because Motzi Shemra, Lokel Mashalim. Right? So you see that it's bizarre. It's weird. So Ela Amareish Lakish, Gamar mi Eidim Zomim, Maidim Zomim, Lav Shem Bamaisa, Lokin Alav, Avko Lav Shem Bamaisa, Lokin Alav. What do you mean? Eidim Zomim is also Lav Shem Bamaisa, and you're going to get Malkus for Eidim Zomim at times. Not all the time, but you're going to get Malkus for Eidim Zomim. Ma'ala Eidim Zomim, Shekain Ein Srech Hasra. The Gemara says, yeah, by Eidim Zomim, however, there you don't need Hasra. You don't need a warning by Eidim Zomim. There's a Chumra that you have by Eidim Zomim, and therefore cannot serve as a precedent. So Motzi Shemra Yochiach. So now here's what we're going to do. We do this often throughout the Gemara. We look at two halachas in the Torah, even though each one of them cannot create a precedent, but we'll look at a common denominator between the two. We have halacha A, which is the halacha of Motzi Shemra. It's strange because Loke Umishalim. We have halacha B, which is halacha of Edom Zomimim. What's strange about it? It doesn't require a sra'ah. Okay, they're both lav she'ein b'maisa. Both times they're going to get Malkus. So the Gemara says from each one of themselves, there's an oddity. So I can't learn from each one in of itself. I'll look at the common denominator. What is the common denominator? Lav she'ein b'maisa v'lokin alav. I've called lav she'ein b'maisa lokin alav. Fine. So I create a binyan av through the common denominator of these two. So the Gemara says, wait a second. Even in its common denominator, they're both fines. Right? The Edom Zomimim is a kanas, according to Rabbi Akiva. And certainly the Motzi Shemra is a kanas. So they're both kanas. So the Gemara says, so how can I establish this to be a precedent? Lo kasha Rabbi Yehuda, lo sevel ka Rabbi Akiva. So the Gemara says, but that's fine. I'll just simply tell you that Rabbi Yehuda does not agree with Rabbi Akiva. He feels Edom Zomimim is mamon, not a kanas. That's fine. Ela mala hatzad shava shabahem shekein yesh bahem tzad chamor. The Gemara says, but the tzad shava shabahem is a chumra, right? Rabbi Yehuda tzad chamor lo parich, and Rabbi Yehuda will say, so what? You're right. It's a chumra. That doesn't bother me. I still can create a tzad hashava, even though they're both chumras. Okay. Now what when we?
There's no hashava for Edom Zomim. Edom you want to say
right.
There must be some
it's not a it's
show you were in Chicago. I mean, what
strategy before you go from what they're going to do and what the consequences
right.
I would think before they give Avis
right, they're told
just like they go if, to the courts and you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth. I'm sure there's some type of version of that
right. All right, but the point is that you don't need to give Hasra. To give punishment to the Edom Zomimim, Hasra is not required.
I
knew, right.
If there's anything, see, someone's violent shots, whatever it is, it's there, it's here in Edom, there's a discussion going on.
Right.
Coming into court.
Right, I hear you. I don't know where the source, is.
I think one of the reasons was that they wanted to encourage people to come and give testimony. And by giving Hashra, it would be
okay. Let's finish up for now. Okay, we'll come back. Now, according to the Chachamim, what do we do with Losana? So the Gemara says, not a problem. That is your warning in the Torah for Edom Zomimim. Right? We say all the time, you cannot punish without a warning. You need two psukim in the Torah. One for Azhara, one for punishment. Edom Zomimim, that's the punishment. Where's the warning for that? So the Gemara says the warning is Losana. According to a mayor, yeah, you do need an Azara for Edom Zomimim, Amar Rav Yirmiyah, Nafgalei, we get it from the Parsha of Edom Zomimim. The Pasuk says, Vanisharim Yishmu'u, V'yira'u, V'lo Yosifu Od. Anyone left over, they're going to see, they're going to certainly be afraid, and they won't do it again. Right? And that is the Azara, that's the warning for Edom Zomim, contained in the Parsha of Edom Zomim itself. The Rabbanan and the Chachamim will say to you, what are you talking about? No, that clause in the Pasuk of Yishmu V'yirah V'lo Yosifu Od, that's Hachraza. Rashi quotes the Gemara in Sanhedrin that teaches us that four people require Hachraza. You need to make a proclamation, and you need to say so and so is about to be killed, and everyone come over. Right, we're gonna have an execution, and everyone's gonna watch, and everyone's gonna say, "Oh boy, I don't want to end up like that." That's what we learn now from the pasuk of Yishmu, right? And then Rav Meir Achrazam Yishmu V'Yirau Nafka, and Rav Meir will subdivide the clause. Rav Meir will take the first words of Yishmu V'Yirau, he'll assign that to the mitzvah of Achraza, and then V'Lo Yusifu Od, that will be the Asra, the Azhara for Edom Zamanim. Okay, a lot of today was huge in terms of the number of basic concepts that comes out from today's Gemara. You could spend, I did it very briefly, you could spend a lot of time talking about the halachas and mikvahs that we did this morning, maim she'uvim, hashaka, the concepts of kidei rishaso, right, risha achas, lo mishtem mishay rishayos, lav hanitan lazaras basin, which we didn't even discuss today, lav hanitak laasei, lav shein b'maisa. Like, wow. Today was a lot in terms of basic concepts of halacha. I'll stop over here. Tomorrow we'll start from the Mishnah.